Good morning and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, also affectionately known as WUF. My name is Salima Malson. I use the pronouns she and her, and it is my privilege to serve as your lay leader today. As we take a virtual break from the ongoing pandemics that continue to thrash around us and among us, living as we do in these times of great challenge and great possibility, we want you to know, whoever and wherever you are at this moment, that you are welcome here exactly as you are, no matter your age or abilities, the color of your skin or where you were born, regardless of whom you love or how you identify your gender, if you do, whatever your spiritual practices may be, or if you have none, we are glad that you're with us this morning, all of us local to this virtual community of conscience and compassion. I encourage you to check the announcements in your order of service to see what other activities are happening this week that help us stay connected. And I invite you to join us for our virtual coffee hour at 11:30, when we will check in with each other, share our joys and sorrows, and have a chance to interact with today's speakers. Now, as I light this chalice, the Unitarian Universalism symbol of our shared and scattered faith, let us consider these words from the late, beloved John Lewis. Our actions entrench the power of the light on the planet. Every positive thought we pass between us makes room for more light. And if we do more than think, then our actions clear the path for even more light. That is why forgiveness and compassion must become more important principles in public life. A reading today offers again words from John Lewis, words that speak to everyone, not only members of our extended community, but as the citizens of the beloved community that can become our world. Anchor the eternity of love in your own soul and embed this planet with goodness. Lean toward the whispers of your own heart. Discover the universal truth and follow its dictates. Release the need to hate, to harbor division, and the enticement of revenge. Release all bitterness. Hold only love, only peace in your heart. Choose confrontation wisely, but when it is your time, don't be afraid to stand up, speak up, and speak out against injustice. And if you follow your truth down the road to peace and the affirmation of love, if you shine like a beacon for all to see, then the poetry of all the great dreamers and philosophers is yours to manifest in a nation, a world community, and a beloved community that is finally at peace with itself. Rooted, inspired, and ready. That was the theme of this year's General Assembly. The first ever, probably not the last, to be held entirely online. Traditionally, GA is a bustling and colorful physical gathering of several thousand of us coming together with excitement and enthusiasm for each other and for the myriad offerings of workshops, lectures, business meetings, and music-filled worship services that both celebrate and challenge who we are as Unitarian Universalists in the world today. This year was very different, but very rich, thanks to the creativity and flexibility of the planners and the technology expertise that was brought into the circle. Rooted indeed, inspired for sure, and ready for anything. You are about to hear from some of the woofers who attended. First, our voting delegates, Doug Watson and Gary Joaquin. And then, Meredy McDaniel, Vince Winters, and Alyssa Joaquin. So sit back and enjoy.
It was a great honor to go to the first General Assembly as a voting delegate of this fellowship. It was amazing to be sharing that experience with UUs from all over the country and beyond, without having to navigate traffic, work my way through crowds, or book into a hotel somewhere. Even in the absence of close proximity, however, it has let you share in an energy field of shared concern and of worship together. I went to GA with a focus on the impact of white supremacist colonization on Indigenous people. It was instructive to see that historical process, as we have framed it in our history books, through Native American eyes. We have seen the European colonization of North America as the coming of brave pilgrims in search of religious freedom. Natives see it as an occupying force. The unlawful seizure of their sovereign lands, the gradual erasure of ancestral culture and spiritual practices, the imposition of foreign institutions, language, and religion. There are many who have become assimilated into the greater American culture, but many have not. They do not see themselves as a minority population within a new nation, but as sovereign nations in relation to another sovereign nation bound by international treaties, which treaties have been abridged and broken many times. Behind our history of brave pioneers, of rugged settlers in an untamed wilderness who forged a fertile, productive civilization, lies a bitter history of exploitation, confiscation, slaughter, rape, a virtual genocide of peoples for whom the earth was sacred and life upon it sustainable. What is lost in all of this is the blatant, if unspoken, presumption that such a course of action was proper and in keeping with the natural order of things. The presumption of white supremacy and privilege that colors the view of history that we have received and our children are taught. To be sure, white European colonization and capitalism have brought many blessings, but they have come at immeasurable and irreversible costs to the earth, its environment, and to its original inhabitants. As UUs committed to the right of every individual to dignity and respect, and to the health of the earth, and to the interrelatedness of all that is, we have a duty to resist that prevalent view of history as telling the whole truth. I am pleased that this congregation includes in its welcome a recognition of the Native peoples on whose land we live. It is our duty to refute the implication that Native persons are inferior, savage, uncivilized pagans, and to insist that they, no less than we, are children of our shared earth. There is in our greater UU fellowship an initiative to add an eighth principle to our statement of shared principles, namely that we oppose racism and the white supremacy on which it is based. Given our first principle, that may seem redundant. But because white supremacy is so systemic in our culture and so prevalent even in our ancestral Unitarianism, it is felt that we must now make explicit where we as persons of faith stand on the issue. This must become part of our theology of liberation, part of our spiritual, political, and cultural stance, a basis for our actions of social justice. As a congregation, we have lived out the implication of that eighth principle in our support of Black Lives Matter, in our stance against the deportation of non-criminal, undocumented persons by ICE, and in our support for the farm workers. But we may be called upon to do more. There is a growing call for reparations for the descendants of enslaved persons. It is not exactly clear what form such reparation should take, or how best it should be administered. But recent events have made crystal clear how severely white supremacy and racism have denied for over 400 years equal treatment in employment, education, housing, medical care, and voting rights to persons of color. Our social, cultural environment, in ways both blatant and subtle, has blinded us not only to the history of suppression, lynching, police brutality, and disproportionate incarceration, but also to the enormous contribution persons of color have made to our nation, our agriculture, our sports, our performing arts, and our economy at large. For the record, as your delegate, I voted for all the proposed amendments and resolutions presented, save one. I abstained from the resolution advocating strong anti-racial action, not because I do not favor strong anti-racial causes, but because the language included support for defunding the police. In this election year, that language is already being distorted in ads and used against us progressives. I enthusiastically support the resolution to more generously support youth and young adults who share our faith and in whose hands the future of Unitarian Universalism rests. Overall, it was a joy to see the wide diversity, competency, and dedication of our leadership at the national level, and to participate in creative worship and inspiring music. The first attempt to present a virtual General Assembly has to be considered a tremendous success and the achievement of an enormous amount of effort. The highlight for me, and I suspect for many, many others, was the Ware Lecture by Dr. Naomi Klein, which espoused a visionary Green New Deal.
My name is Gary Joaquin. I do not have a pronoun preference. I wanted to attend GA this year because it was going to be hosted in my hometown of Providence, Rhode Island. However, the pandemic quickly canceled those plans. Fortunately, there was a silver lining. GA has moved to a 100% virtual format with steeply discounted registration fees, eliminated all barriers to attending. So my wife, Elisa, and I registered. One of the added attractions for me was serving as one of your two GA lay member delegates allocated to WOOF by the UUA. I was very curious about how the GA business meetings were conducted. Overall, the entire conference was a wonderful experience. Too much to describe in totality, so here are a few highlights. I loved the virtual format. It was so much richer than attending GA in person. With my home computer, I could quickly research presenters, topics, and organizations, and take extensive notes. It was so much easier to lead workshops that were a poor fit for me, and immediately switch to my second or third options without walking across a huge convention center. I didn't have to worry about arriving early for the Ware Lecture because every seat was great. I even took a shower before the lecture, and no one knew that my hair was still wet. I had fun learning about the UUA, a $27 million organization, about where GA presenters fit into the UUA organizational chart, the services that they provide to congregations, and the external social justice organizations with whom they collaborate. This newly obtained knowledge enabled me to make meaningful new connections with individuals, committees, and organizations. I was fascinated to witness how the UUA Board of Trustees moderators and their IT staff adapted to the technical challenges of conducting 9 hours of business meetings over 4 days, attended by almost 5,000 participants, of whom 1,500 were delegates. There were several understandable glitches where meetings ended too early or had to be entirely stopped and restarted. Personally, I had numerous frenetic moments trying to read and understand new amendments before casting my vote. I was not surprised to discover that I was nowhere near as left-leaning as the majority of GA delegates were on the action of immediate witness, amen to uprising, the commitment and call to action, which explicitly called for the immediate defunding of police departments. The absence of a detailed plan describing how communities would transition from conventional policing to multidisciplinary teams compelled me to vote with the minority against this action. I agonized over my vote because many UUs, including our UUA president, strongly supported this action. Ultimately, I could not support it because it did not even suggest that communities develop a plan before defunding took place. Its language emphasized the key word immediate, like falling off a cliff or taking a leap of faith. I'm much more deliberate than that. I need to know how we are going to meet public safety service needs before dismantling the institutions currently providing such services. I felt some relief when the action passed with only 82% in favor, much lower than the other actions that passed almost unanimously with 96 to 99% of the vote. This meant that I was the only delegate with reservations. I was inspired to learn about the UU Religious Innovators Network, a startup whose time may have come during this pandemic. Paraphrasing from their website, uuinnovators.org, their mission is to assist people in redefining what it means to be in a religious community, to alleviate the loneliness and alienation during times of social distancing and accelerated change, and to envision how Unitarian Universalism can meet the deep hunger that people have for authentic communities of purpose and meaning. They hope to facilitate such change by deploying teams of innovators trained in a rigorous, human-centered design methodology that emphasizes deep empathy to ensure that problem solvers understand congregational needs, problem-solving methods that emphasize non-linear, iterative steps, and smaller-scale prototypes for change which can be implemented and evaluated rapidly. This network is always looking for people with a variety of skills. If this interests you, please check out their website. I could say so much more. I didn't comment on the UUA Commission of Institutional Change report, Widening the Circle of Concern, a significant work, or on two outstanding keynote speakers, ESPN's Howard Bryant, the author of Full Dissonance, or Naomi Klein, feminist, journalist, and climate activist. In so many ways, GA is like trying to swallow an entire elephant without chewing. It is an incredible learning experience, one which I heartily recommend, especially since it will be available next year virtually with discounted registration. It has been an honor to serve as your GA delegate this year.
Hello, I'm Meredy McDaniel, and my personal pronouns are she, her. I've attended a couple of General Assemblies, and I've been a member of, I think, about 7 Unitarian Universalist congregations. Attending this General Assembly online was so different from years past, with the usual milling around to see old friends from far away, to be able to stand together and sing, attend workshops and learn something interesting, to go out for coffee and talk with new friends. It was considerably less expensive, though, so many more people were able to attend this year from the relative comfort of their homes. For me, it brought renewed optimism for the potential of our principles to help move us toward a better, safer, and more equitable world. All too fresh while attending General Assembly were the videotaped murders of Ahmaud Arbery in Brunswick, Georgia, and George Floyd in Minneapolis, Minnesota, one by a former investigator with the District Attorney's Office and his son in Brunswick, Georgia, and the other by 4 police officers in Minneapolis. Along with those horrors, there was the video shared on social media of a young white woman in a New York City park calling 911 and making a false police report of being threatened by a black man who was birdwatching and had merely asked her to put the leash back on her dog. But the response of people around the world who stand up and shout that this must cease felt so deeply encouraging. It was clear to me that for the first time, many people were seeing the world through someone else's eyes, and they were revolted by what they saw. For the first time, people were hearing and understanding the anguish of living with the constant fear that their children, their brothers, their sisters, their fathers, and their mothers might walk out the door and never return because someone was afraid of them for no rational reason. For the first time, many were learning how the systems of racial oppression have worked together since, as Angela Davis put it in the 1960s, the first African was kidnapped, enslaved, and brought to America through to the present day. At our Unitarian Universalist General Assembly, those of us who are not people of color were asked to move beyond being allies to being accomplices. And that felt so deeply and profoundly optimistic to me. Despite everything, I remain joyful and confident that we will yet live in that world Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said he dreamed of back in August 1963. And I will try to follow the advice of Atlanta's U.S. Representative John Lewis, who not long ago spoke at the General Assembly in Portland, and who wrote on June 27, 2018, "Do not get lost in a sea of despair. Be hopeful. Be optimistic. Our struggle is not the struggle of a day, a week, a month, or a year. It is the struggle of a lifetime. Never, ever be afraid to make some noise and get in good trouble, necessary trouble." Thank you.
Hi, my name is Vince Winters, and I've been a member of WOLF since December of 2019. This was my first time attending a UA General Assembly, and I found it to be a well-organized, well-run conference, which had much interesting and relevant content. The organizers and their technical support people did a really good job on this first ever remote virtual General Assembly. Another thing that struck me was the pervasiveness of Black presenters, participants, and themes. This was a commitment that was clearly much deeper than just a reaction to the George Floyd tragedy. There was also a great deal of energy and optimism among the participants at the assembly. I will now describe one of the sessions that I attended and found particularly interesting. The session was titled Creating a Community of Communities. The presenters described and discussed a proposal to change the way we look at ourselves as a church. The idea has apparently been around for a while and is currently being incorporated into some churches. It is based on the belief that the historical model of a church as a family makes it difficult to build equality into relationships and makes it more difficult to function effectively in today's society. The crux of the proposal is to change from the historical point of view that we all belong to one thing, our church, to the point of view that we each belong to multiple communities as well as our church. So the church draws its identity from multiple communities. Some obvious examples of overlapping communities are elders, young adults, LGBTQ, Black, Latino, and various social and environmental justice groups. The proposal does not lend itself to the succinct, detailed description, so I will just give a couple of examples that the presenters gave. One example is if a committee were being organized to consider some transformation within the church, rather than electing or appointing members from the congregation at large, the various communities would be asked to submit the name of someone to represent them on the committee. This would give the work of the committee a wide base of input and presumably a wide base of support. It would also make the work of the committee more transparent, helping people understand that their interests were being considered. A second example would be of how a visitor who is a prospective member becomes introduced to the church. Rather than having a single point of contact whose identity may or may not resonate with the visitor, a representative from each of multiple communities could meet with the visitor and explain the identity of their community. They would also explain that theirs was only one of multiple communities within the church. This could increase the likelihood that the visitor could visualize themselves fitting into the church via a community with whom they identify. I found this an interesting and potentially worthwhile idea. It was explored in much greater depth during the session. Thank you.
My name is Elisa Joaquin. My pronouns are she, her, and hers, most of the time. I'm here to talk about GA as a participant. Virtual GA was an interesting experience.
though I missed walking the halls of a convention center, seeing all the people, soaking up the energy, and seeing all the banners from the congregations. Don't get me wrong, virtual GA had its positive moments as well. I was able to attend workshops, even services, without leaving my home. It was stress-free. I could even take a nap if I needed to and still participate. I attended both live stream workshops as well as on-demand ones. I would like to talk about one workshop I attended. It was called Charting a Future for Inclusive Democracy. The workshop illustrated the distribution of wealth and how there needed to be an inclusive policy for shared prosperity. They showed the history of the distribution of wealth. Then the speaker talked about how wealth could be redefined by including what are called valued assets. Wealth for most people is defined by the money they make. But there are other assets that we have that can also determine a person's wealth. And those include your home, your car, land, and even investments. This workshop sounded like a financial report, one that appeared bleak, and because of the disparity between the wealthiest and the poorest. Then the speaker talked about something unexpected, artificial intelligence. How could artificial intelligence be considered a valued asset? Maybe as an investment. He then went on to introduce a somewhat shocking revelation. He introduced the first IA robot, which turns out is also the first robotic citizen of Saudi Arabia. Her name is Sophia. This was a game changer. This got me thinking in ways I did not expect. I thought about the show Star Trek, and about Data, and Android, and the episode on whether Data was a machine or a sentient being. Sophia is the first of her kind and a citizen. What does that mean? Is she considered a valued asset, or does she have her own voice? Does her creator define her gender, or can she change her gender to be whomever she wants? Does she have a vote as a citizen? Will she be able to determine her own self-worth? What will her future hold? And will she be considered a valued member of the beloved community? Getting back to Data, it was ruled that Data did have sentience, and he did have a choice with regards to his existence. But what about Sophia? Either way, the future of inclusiveness has changed. Artificial intelligent robots are here. They may need to be included when discussing inclusiveness. But if people will only see them as machines and not a person, we may be holding up signs along the street in support of robot rights.
As we extinguish the chalice, marking the end of our time together today, may we resolve to carry within us the warm glow of its flame and all that it stands for, as we make our way through the coming week and all that it brings. And may we meet again in a spirit of peace, compassion, and health.